Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yellowstone, Season 2, Episodes 9 and 10, Enemies by Monday and Sins of the Father, are over, but we're just getting started over here, post-show recaps. Welcome back, my friends. It is I, Rich Filiberto, DM Philly, out here on the internet, back with you again for yet another week talking about Yellowstone. I, of course, am not alone. I'm joined by a woman who often lets me use her first name, the one and only Grace Leader. Grace, how are you?
I'm doing well. I thought this was a great ending to the season. I thought season two was pretty strong. I think this is a much better season finale than season one finale. So I'm excited to chat with you about it.
Yeah, me too. I'm very psyched to chat with you about it. I think that season two really comes together in a great way. We've been talking about it all through the season, but it feels like they find themselves. They really are able to execute on their ideas well. It synergizes better. And I do think it's an incredible finale. Your dad, Taylor Sheridan, channeling his Sicario writing chops, I feel like. Oh. Like that last hour is a bit like an action movie, Grace. It pops off.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the thing that it actually reminds me of is like the season, the series premiere.
Yes.
Which is this hour and a half long spectacle. And I feel like to a degree and there's a lot of that in here at the beginning, obviously mostly revolving around Casey killing many people.
Yes.
But yeah, we kind of diverge from it to a degree as like the tensions. I don't know that they settle, but they're certainly not as like as much in danger as the series premiere happens to be. And I feel like this is fitting and kind of like what I thought would be at the end of season one, where it sort of like come back to that and,
yep,
and make like a moment out of the finale. We didn't get that in season one, but I definitely feel like we got it in season two. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like the threats, much like John Dutton's shotgun, they diffuse, right? They just kind of like spread out. It's a much less concentrated pressure as we get into it.
And, you're not going to get, I know Dan Jenkins isn't dead. You're not going to fool me this time.
Oh yeah.
Really.
Sure,
I know.
Are you sure of this?
He's coming back. I know it. Season 3, he'll be like, oh, you almost got me. You shot me right in the head.
He's taking a long nap in his body bag by the end. So we're wrapping up our season two coverage for Yellowstone. We might as well stop down right here off the top to say that CBS currently does not have plans for season three. We do not have word
yet. They might. They just have not announced anything.
They might. We just don't have word yet on if or when they will be airing those episodes. So we're going to stop down and take a little break. We're trying to run pace with CBS. If it seems like they're not going to be coming back with it, you probably will be hearing from us again sometime likely in the new year. But as soon as CBS puts word out, if they're coming back with season three, we will be right there on its heels. I just want to give you that heads up. If you're just finding us now somehow, you could go back and get all of our season one and two coverage. postshowrecaps.com/Yellowstone is the RSS feed. You can subscribe. You'll get all of the stuff that Grace and I are doing, talking about Montana out there in the Yellowstone Ranch. Of course, all these VODs are up live on YouTube. YouTube Post Show Recaps. Go search us. You will find us. That's the bookkeeping, Grace. Two episodes. I mean, we talked about it a little bit, but you're coming away feeling pretty good about the conclusion of season two.
Yeah, I have a nitpick here or there, but overall I thought it worked. I thought it was pretty good. I thought that there's a very clear threat to John and sort of he has to like rally the troops. I thought that there is some really good emotional character work here, particularly for sure, as it comes to Beth and Rip and John. And so overall it does feel pretty satisfying, while also not wrapping up all ends of the show, knowing that the show has more runway to it. So I thought overall, yeah, I'm pretty satisfied with this, like the pair of last episodes and how it wraps up season two.
Yeah, I walk away with two conflicting feelings. I really think episode 10 is strong. I think it ends really, really well. I feel like we spend a long time going like pretty far off the beaten path in episode 9. And part of it, I think I have a really charitable interpretation of, but part of it I'm really cynical and jaded about. Like, I think these are two very unequal episodes of Yellowstone. And part of me comes away feeling a little bit like, might they have been better served by 9 episodes season two rather than season 10. Yeah, which is a rarity. I mean, if anybody's been hearing me talking about TV, especially in 2023, I am lamenting a lot the loss of episodes in the series structure. I think that you hit a lot of these 8-episode shows and it hurts because we don't have the time for character development that we did once upon a time on the small screen. So I'm of two minds and I'm sure that we will dig into it all. I got a couple of short, long recaps. I tried to keep them pretty truncated this week, Grace. I'll dig into those and then we can talk through it all.
Let's do it.
Let us do it. Episode 9, Enemies by Monday. We pick up episode 9 as Casey and Dan's bodyguard set a bomb in the fuel tank of the Beck brothers' plane. The cops end up confirming that Jimmy's granddad seems to have died of injuries, and they come to the ranch to let him know. He's furious and wants to go get his revenge right now. Rip and Casey have a conversation about it, and Rip says that they need to resolve this tonight because Jimmy is not inclined to wait. Meanwhile, Christina calls Jamie to meet. She's understandably very upset about what happened to Sarah and gives him an ultimatum while she reveals that she is pregnant with his child. Monica is browsing a boutique in town when the owner accuses her of theft. The situation escalates very quickly and the police end up there strip searching and humiliating her. But Beth arrives to turn the tables and give the store owner a taste of her own medicine. The pair end up bonding afterwards, discussing the family. Dan comes to the Yellowstone Ranch and he and John have a conversation about what happens after the brothers are dead. With John explains that he cannot afford to let Dan sell the land, and Dan says, I guess that we're enemies on Monday again, to which John asserts, we are enemies right now. Casey, Rip, and Jimmy head out that night to deal with the meth heads. They plan to blow the house up, but Jimmy goes in to retrieve his rodeo belt buckle and confronts his grandpa's killer. And back on the ranch, Tate has gone to feed his horse, but we learn that the boy has been kidnapped, and Casey and the gang return from their nocturnal ranch work. That's episode 9, Grace. Episode 10, Sins of the Father, we open to a flashback of John and his father riding the ranch. His dad tells him not to let them take an inch and grows emotional, reflecting on the process of aging. We slide out of it only to find John with Rip, and John explains that his life has been a series of losing the things he loves most and states he isn't going to lose this one. Dan is waking up as assassins approach his house. He manages to kill two of them, but he's badly hurt in the effort. And as he steps outside the home, a third executes him. As he lays on the floor dying, he asserts he has every right to be here because this is America. John, meanwhile, gathers the kids to plan their response. He makes Beth leave, saying that someone needs to be left for Tate when all of this is done. Sheriff Donnie ends up going to Dan's, and John forces his hand, saying that he needs to choose a side. Donnie ends up getting some info, giving all the info he can about the Beck brothers, and he helps to spook them so that they both will get together. That night, Casey goes to their house, where he finds and kills one of the brothers, Teal, after getting information about where Tate is being kept. John and Thomas have a conversation, and Rainwater sends his number two man to help them and to show his commitment to their alliance. John gives Beth an amendment to the trust, and she ends up reading it, learning that he left the old ranch house to Rip. She walks Rip out to it and reads the letter wherein John refers to Rip as one of his sons, and the man is deeply touched. Shortly thereafter, Casey comes to him explaining they have to attack a fortified location and that he needs someone to ride point and draw fire, to which Rip agrees. The team heads out, and John ends up shooting Malcolm and sitting with them as he explains this is his last opportunity to tell him where Tate is and get to a hospital, or he can die alone in the field. Malcolm tells him where Tate is and asserts that he's not going to live long enough to get help and asks to die alone in the field anyway. And as the livestock agents storm the house, Casey finds a deeply traumatized Tate, who they bring home. The ep closes as Beth heads outside, relieved that Tate is okay, only to find Rip never far away. She ends up explaining that they're going to lose this ranch someday and she cannot wait. And as she heads back to the house, she sees her father, John Dutton, come outside and break down weeping as we cut to a wide sweeping shot of the ranch. That is the season finale of Yellowstone season 2, Grace. Where do you want to start? We're all over the place on these two, I think.
Yeah, but I think that the overarching theme is like Tate gets kidnapped. And
yes,
that sets
that's
everything.
A pretty big theme.
It yeah. sets everything in motion. So the stuff I really like about it, there's a fair bit. I like the showdown with the Beck brothers. I like when Casey kills Teal and he's like, you thought I wouldn't come, like I, you know, the one piece that I struggle with that I hope we get more from season 3 is essentially this was like Monica's like basically worst case scenario for worst Casey scenario being in John Dutton's like purview, right?
Yep.
Being in his world.
Yep.
And it's like the almost maybe an outcome that she never really thought. She kind of thought like it's like dangerous for Tate, but not in like, I don't think she would have ever thought he gets kidnapped.
No, I'm with you. I think it's important to identify that her concern for Tate is about what type of man are these people going to teach my son to be, right? It's more about the outward violence and not this perception of ever really being threatened. I think John postures so much. There are people threatening us. We have to stand up and fight for what we want. And this is the first time that we're really seeing the Duttons on the back foot, right?
Right. And so what I really hope we get more of is this idea that this is the worst thing that like could like actually happen to Tate. And certainly he is extremely traumatized when he's picked up by Casey and gets driven home. On the other hand, in episode 9, we get the scene where she is confronted at the jewelry shop. And I really don't know how I feel about this scene. Part of me does feel like in the way that, you know, earlier you made this a really good point at the end of season 1, where I was like, you know, when the girl from the strip bar comes and works at the ranch, and I can't remember what her name is. And you were, I couldn't put my thumb on why I didn't like it. And you were like, oh, it's because like, it's like, seems like it's like feminism written by men. And I was like, oh yeah, that's such a good point. And I feel like this scene here is like, is racism written by like white people, I think.
Like,
and yeah. Right. And so I don't love the actual scene and how it plays. And not because I don't think that this should happen. I think that, and I do think like there are elements of this that do happen to people. It goes to the most extreme version I've ever really seen depicted in a show, which she's like forced to strip search.
It's so naked. Over the top.
And if that is how it happens, like I didn't really like go and like start looking into this, whether like this is a thing that's happened, then, you know, retract my statement. What I do like about it is when she calls Beth and the way that Beth is the person who comes and helps her. There's even a moment when John comes to tell them that Tate has been rescued. That,
and they're together on the couch. Monica's blankets. They've clearly spent that night bonding.
Monica has her head on Beth's lap, and so you can tell that they have bonded. And so I like that, because what I do like about the tension there is, as Beth is like at the end of the episode, like, I can't wait for this place to be burned down. Like, I can't wait for it to be gone out of our lives. Monica must be feeling similarly, but also the way that she's like connected to the family, and the way Beth had said, like, don't get mad at like the family that's like provide, you know, we're all providing for you, right? Mm-hmm. So I like the tension that builds, and the way that Monica might continue to want to like separate herself from the Duttons, but also knows that like it's not all bad to be part of the Dutton family. Like, if your kid gets kidnapped otherwise, probably don't have the manpower to go and like get your kid back in the way that they do in this episode, you know?
Yeah, it's a really it's a really like hypocritical situation for her to be trapped in, because there is so much to be gained from this. I mean, lest we forget her whole employment at the college. This is happening because of her connection to the Dutton family, right? Like, this is not a job that Monica went and pursued. This is a job that they offered to her, that they were able to use their connections to bring to the table. I think we've talked a lot about the way that the show doesn't shy away from the plight of the indigenous people in the United States, and the circumstance of dealing with these tribal leaders and the landowners in Montana, and the conflict that's like built into that. We've like, you know, articulated some of like the sexist overtones that like exist in this very male dominated society. And I think this is attacking both of those head on in a really bold way that I appreciate. I'm glad that this storyline takes like such a central space, because it dominates the episode. I mean, it like really runs like 20 something minutes of a 40 minute episode we spend in that boutique. The way that it plays out, I mean, you know, when I like lambast the show for being a soap opera, I think like this episode 9 is as soap opera-y as it gets, Grace, of like, I'm having your baby, Jamie, you know.
Yeah.
into this scene of like the racist shop owner is going to take like the slightly suspicious person and escalate it to the degrees that the police are like, all right, take your clothes off. They're just like all in on like the full tilt judgmental racism. It's so over the top. And then Beth's response is so like wild and vitriolic. You talked a little bit last week about this idea of like Beth behaving badly, and does she ever suffer consequences of those choices? Like, this is really over the top. She's white knighting to a degree. I mean, she's really like righteously defending her sister-in-law, who has been like, you know, like cast in this haze of prejudice and is totally being railroaded here. But it feels very like gratuitous and exploited also, Grace, of like, let's like get all these women's clothes off. And like, it's just so far, and we spend so much time there, and like, I appreciate its inclusion. I do not think the execution works for me as well as they want it to, right? Like, it gets me thinking about these ideas and these themes in a way that I appreciate, but it's just so kind of like ridiculous. And it makes me like uncomfortable in not a good way, where I'm like, God, they had to like oversee this. Like, I don't know, you know?
I think for me, there's a moment, the show has said it itself, which is when the physiotherapist is like, you know, be careful, like, don't always show the tragedy, you need to show the celebration. We obviously get the like the rap concert from last week, I think. I just maybe wish there was more. Like, I think one of the things that's hard for me too, and obviously there's like a lot to try and fit into this show, but like, there's a reason why Monica like did live on the reservation, and she's so connected to the reservation. The reason why she's not going to take the professor job is because she won't be able to teach at the school. And then she ultimately ends up like continuing to do that. She decides like it's worth it to basically do both things and like stretch herself thin. And so she has this connection to like her community and her people. But then I feel like the way that the show is depicting her almost all the time is through like her being a victim. And so I don't, again, that's like a real, like, you know, the way that she is subject to like prejudice and racism by like a shopkeeper, that is entirely a real story that yes. people encounter in our society
every day,
all the time.
Yeah.
Every day. It's just like, yeah, the extent that it gets like pushed you to be an extreme for a television show is tough. Like, I don't know what, and again, I don't want to discredit like if that's a real experience that people have been through.
No, or somebody brought
that for that to be the moment in the show. It's really awful. I do hope that like more so, I mean, I guess that's what the show is that Beth comes in and like rams up the shop instead of like you know, them like settling, you know, with like some sort of lawsuit or whatever. But yeah.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say. Your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
No, that is what the show is. I do think it's important that Beth and Monica connected. Like, I think there's a little bit of like, okay, we've done 18 episodes of the show. We have two really prominent female leads that basically have never spoken a line to each other, right? So this bonding feels good, and it does feel so out of nowhere, but the writing is strong there of like, I'm calling you because if I call Casey, he's going to kill somebody. You know what I mean? Like, and also, like, there's that element, like, with John saying to Beth early on, I need evil. Like, you know, Monica knows who she's calling when she calls Beth Dunn to be like, come deal with this. I need you to help. Right. And yeah. Beth is a real pit bull there. I think it's cool because look, Monica is a character that I think like does not have agency thus far. There's like very little agency. It's mostly her course is being dictated by the circumstances of the family, of Casey, of her son, of all these events around her, where Beth does have some agency. I think it has like seized it. And after watching her beaten within an inch of her life and being rescued by Rip in that way, to see her then step in and like, you know, metaphorically rescue Monica ultimately without having to do physical violence. She does a commensurate amount of emotional violence in that shop. And it is for this really righteous reason. So it feels good, right? There's that element of like, we're steeping in like the righteous rage, Grace, of like, she's yeah. in the right. So we like seeing her be this horrible to another human being. But even Monica has to draw the line. and I appreciate that. Just felt a bit gratuitous. Like, I didn't love how long we had to spend stripping everybody down. Was not my favorite. Yeah. Just to shift away from it before we get too far, because it's such a small beat. Jamie's going to be a dad, Grace. I got to like tag in on it, because again, like, the soap opera vibes felt like huge through episode 9. How are you feeling about this? Of like Christina's whole reaction, this whole meeting, all of it. Jamie's story in general as it's closing out season 2, because it's a little bit of like a dud of a firework. There's not a lot happening here.
Yeah, I mean, it's fully a thing that you pull out. I mean, a baby is literally one of those things that like comedies often get, like a marriage, a baby, you know, pregnancy, something that like is a plot mechanic you can use to like make some interest. You can like, you know, keep the energy going on your show. That's really what this feels like. I feel like they're totally lost with Jamie. My favorite Jamie moment, because I think it's like, it's brutal, because the tough part is that I don't know how we're supposed to feel about Jamie. I feel like we are supposed to be sympathetic towards him, but I
think so. Yeah.
But I don't, I mean, he killed a woman, which is literally why he's being confronted. But there's this moment, which, like, not to say that people on the show can't have killed people, and then we are like sympathetic for them, to them, like John and Casey.
Yeah, I'm super sympathetic towards Casey. He's killed a lot of people, but
Yeah, but it, you know, to feel like his, you know, there were so many times where that was like really the only like really awful killing is like Monica's brother-in-law. I feel like all the other ones are like, he puts a guy out of his misery because his meth lab blows up. He kills the kidnappers, right? John giving the letter to Beth and being like, I need you to change the like my will, basically. Mm-hmm. We're gonna go get Tate. You stay here. And then the piece about Rip getting the thing, and Jamie goes, what does it say? And she goes, none of your goddamn business. And she walks away. That's so harsh. John gives her the letter right in front of him. And then like, it's a letter that basically says like, I have enough sons. And then he completely ignores Jamie as he walks into the house. That is brutal. And it's like the closest they ever get to being like, oh man, like, yeah, that does really suck for Jamie. But then also like, yeah, I don't care really much.
The Wes Bentley energy's got me too good. I really do like the guy. And so I have the sympathy for Jamie. I especially love this moment in time of Jamie, of like, you know, Jamie's story crescendoed with the death of Saren. This was like not what he wanted to do, but he was like driven to this point. He reacted really badly. I'm not absolving him of the choice, right? But his family has clearly traumatized this kid pretty bad. And I just love Wes Bentley in his cowboy gear, Grace, of like him hanging out in the flannels and his jeans and his baseball cap, like getting back down to earth, trying to square up. Were you surprised to see Christina return? Like, were you pretty sure this was a character that we were done with, or did you expect this?
You know what's funny is, because last week I think I said, oh, like Saren Aegean, and this is a woman he has a romantic interest with, which is not true. I lied. She's in another relationship. And it's just that she's like interviewing, because I forgot that like he's actually in the relationship. I knew he was in a relationship. He has this like romantic, because I remember the scene about like him telling like why he's in power or not.
Why he's pursuing politics.
I mean, no, I wasn't really expecting her to come back, but I this is better than like, you know, ooh, random new recasting, or like a random woman from his past who's like actually like, you know, a year ago
with your son,
so I think this is good. And then the thing that I actually think is the most interesting about it, obviously you can't really you play your hand here, but I what I think is interesting is like Casey is competent, but Casey also has a son who John loves. And so the idea that Jamie could like actually earn back some love of it, I think that like John was willing to like set Casey out, right? Like he was willing, but he was always like lured back in. And this is the whole point why Tate gets kidnapped, because it's the thing he loves the most in the world. So the idea that like Jamie having a child, and this is very sad in the way that like, I'm like, oh, it could actually help his relationship, which is like the worst possible thing that you could do. Like,
this
is where like a couple are like not well together, and they're like, maybe having a child will fix it. It's like, no.
Let's get a dog. Don't do it. Just break up. It's a wide world out there. Don't get the dog. It doesn't need to be subjected to that.
So I can't. That's the only thing I'm interested in. The Jamie kid thing is like how it affects his relationship with John.
I feel like he's just such a sad character. You know what I mean? He gets like, he's such a dick in the beginning, and then he just gets ping ponged around so hard. And really, like, the terrible stuff that he's done, like, he seems like the least okay with doing terrible stuff of a lot of this family, where Casey just seems like Inui. Like, he's just so kind of like worn down. And,
I
like,
love
jaded
it.
And cynical.
When he's like, this is the thing I'm good at, actually.
Yeah. Father. It's like, killing people.
I'm gonna go kill a Beck brother and find my son. Yeah,
it's really intense. Let's just circle back and talk about Beth and Rip for a minute before we get into the whole like extraction job of it all. So this Beth and Rip beat, right? Like Rip saved her. We've gotten a little bit of the backstory of their relationship across season two, some clarity there, this connection. He like shows up and saves her in the 11th hour. She's been like so angry that John has like, you know, stepped Rip down. And then this fraught relationship, I can't help it, Grace. There's just some scenes in Yellowstone that are so ridiculous. I go back to them all the time. And I just keep going back to the season one, like Rip rides up to Casey in the middle of the field and they just cowboy up because, you know, and now like we're going to come to the ultimate bro down where like neither of them could really say what they're feeling here. Like even Casey, like he's like, this is a hard thing to ask you. I basically need to ask you to run a suicide job. I need a guy in an armored car, except instead of an armored car, we could give you a horse.
So
the whole thing here, Grace, it's so over the top, but it gets to like some really satisfying stuff of John being like, today of all days that I have to ask you this, or Rip being like, it's the perfect day, sir. And then like Thomas's guy doing the like paint, the symbology on the horse, to like protect it, give it all like the stuff. That's like my favorite probably moment of like this. But I love it so much, but it's a real relationship between these two guys.
So what I really hope that comes from this is that I hope that there's real tension from him being the one to being asked to this moment. I love that we get this idea that like John changes his will to be like, I have enough sons. And yet the person that they choose to go and be the person who I actually did think Rip was dying. Like I thought the moment was
you thought this was it, right?
I thought he was being basically told he was his son right before he gets asked to go and die.
Yeah.
And so I'm really surprised actually that he doesn't. I do want the show to follow up with this because I think this is like this is really interesting.
This whole notion of John saying to Casey, I can't risk you, right? That the reality of like he's making this big magnanimous overture. You're my son, Rip, but you're not really my son.
Well, you're not really my son. I'm willing to let you ride a horse. Yeah. In and to like see where the gunfire is, and it's a very good chance that you'll die. And he's very lucky that he doesn't die. And this is the type of thing that I think for a very long time, Rip will say, like, of course I was going to do it. Like, of course I would do it. I will always say yes to you, John Dutton. But, and at the same time, there has to be like, oh, there's going to be another moment where he's like, you know, it's the same thing. It's the same pattern.
Again,
he's not actually his son. And he's like, yeah, look what I've done for you. I think that's really fun. And, you know, there's like, I'm a big pro wrestling fan. And for me, like, I think sometimes like, it's really fun to just like throw things into the mix. There was like a pay-per-view recently where I just thought like, oh my God, there's so many things at play here that they're talking about. And they're not going to play off all of them all the time. Like there's the two guys who, you know, whatever. And this is the same thing where I feel like this has set up such a like interesting dynamic moving forward that the same day that he gives him that house, I love Beth's line. I was like, yeah, you can't account for taste, but you know, pretty nice gesture or whatever. The same day he does that, it's also the same day that they're like, yeah, you gotta write through. Like, why couldn't it be random? I guess because that person wouldn't do it or would back out or like wouldn't do it as effectively or whatever. I just think it's really interesting. Yeah.
It's one of these dynamics where, you know, sometimes you're in a position of leadership and you need somebody you fully trust and can absolutely rely on to like not balk, to do the job, to do it the way that you need it done, to your expectations. Like you need somebody who's got the skills, right? And the reality is like, you know, who else are they going to ask? Like John's coming down to like, he needs a son. He needs somebody that's invested enough in this family that they're willing to put their life on the line to say, Dave Tate, presumably. But it can't really be his only son, right? Because in his reality, like, he really does only have one left. All the others keep quitting and dying on him, Grace.
So good.
There's a lot of really great lines. I think, like, Kevin Costner, we're hitting peak Kevin Costner as John Dutton as we come into episode 10. There's just, a couple of great
I love him sitting down with Malcolm, and what I really think is, like, the best example of the way in which this show delivers complexity in terms of morally gray characters is when he shot Malcolm and he sits and he waits for him to die. He's waiting for him to die out so that essentially he will tell him where his son is. And he eventually says it and he goes, okay, like, I'll get you a helicopter. He's like, the helicopter's not coming, man. But he's like, yeah, but I told you I would. And then offering him, like, you want me here? You want to die alone? He's like, yeah, I want to die alone. So he leaves. Like, it's like, you know, a gentleman's agreement, but the gentleman is like a horrific human being, you know, so horrific gentleman, but yet he is being a gentleman. I love, this is some of my favorites. I'm like, this is where, like, in Breaking Bad, like, Walt believes all the way along that he has this, like, moral code, right? That, like, the reasons he's doing things are for good. And you can't argue that, like, what John is trying to do is trying to get his grandson back, you know? And yet at the same time, like, he does decide to, like, you know, call a helicopter if Malcolm wants it, you know? I thought it was interesting.
It's an excellent scene. I think it's such a great bookend, kind of like a parallel to the opening scene of him and his dad, right? Him and his dad just, like, sitting up at the mountain, looking at the world, talking, bonding, these vulnerable moments. It's so interesting because I, like, that kind of led me to this question. I'll circle back to it, I guess. But then I think you get the other side of it at the end where John's just going to sit down in the grass and it's so casual.
Yeah.
There's such a vibe to it. Just the way that he's sitting, he's leaned back. He's so kind of casual with his shotgun to the side, and he's talking, he's looking up at the stars, the grass is blowing, and even all the livestock guys are like, what the hell is he doing? Like, what is he doing here? You know, it's a really powerful scene between these two guys, and Neil McDonough, like, just, like, not telling him, and then finally giving him what he wants and being like, just leave me alone, dude. Like, I'm dead, you know, I'm dead. I wish I just never would have met you.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. He's like, yeah, I bet you wish you didn't. Yeah, it's so good. The only thing I really dislike from this moment is the way that Casey is just sort of, like, sitting and watching. And I know there's, like, not much you can do, but this is a man whose son has been kidnapped.
Yes.
And so the idea that
he should be, like, apoplectic. Yeah.
And even something, if there's some acknowledgement that, like, Casey wants to do something, but he knows, like, John will not let him, like John is the ringleader here. Like, John knows what to do. This is the move. But I just, Casey, like, sort of, like, hanging with the guys being like, ah, yeah, classic dad, you know? And I'm like, your son is, like, kidnapped. Like, your son is, like, is not
I'm
here.
With you.
It's the only piece I feel like, I don't know, it just, like, rubbed me the wrong way, because also, like, that's not the Casey we've seen. Like,
everything we've seen characterizing Casey is that the guy's a little bit of a hothead. Like, he
especially
responds
for his
to
family
things. He reacts, and like, you know, even just the way he yells at John when they come back to the ranch, and he's like, you let him go alone to feed the horse, and he's like, we're never alone here. And I get that element of, like, living in that kind of environment, you feel like you're never alone, you feel impervious, you feel invulnerable, you're really not, you know.
It's like when I used to run summer camp, like, we would do all these, like, trainings, because, like, if a camper goes missing, and almost all the time, like, it just, like, it almost is wild when a kid actually, like, does go missing. And almost any time we did it, it's just, like, they were just in the bathroom, they didn't tell anyone they were going. Honestly, is it? But it's, like, yeah, surprising that, like, yeah, and because there's just, like, people everywhere, and yet you can kind of, like, yeah, go.
Well, there's such danger in that, right? When you look at, like, metropolitan life, like, the anonymity of a crowd and, like, the way that nobody can respond, it's a really kind of terrifying feature of the human existence. But I really was struck by a lot of the John Dutton stuff. I thought it's so great. I love the flashback with this dad in the beginning, because you get this small vulnerable moment and the dad starts crying and John's like, it's just the whiskey, don't worry about it. And these guys are such caricatures, Grace. They're the Marlboro man, right? They're like this hard, steely, gruff exterior, full tilt cowboys. The dad, the old man, is like 90 years old. He's from another age, right? This is a man that was, like, born in the last century, presumably. And he's, like, totally coming apart and like so upset that he's even coming apart. And John's like, oh, it's okay, it's just the whiskey. And it just struck me in terms of like who we really are, these notions of our identity. humanity is John Dutton is a man that, like, he just loves his family. He loves his dad, right? He's trying to be a good son. He's trying to be a good dad. And that makes him a ruthless, dangerous murderer, right? Like, he's willing to do these terrible things. These guys go through the world and they're so, like, the steely, gruff exterior. But the truth is, like, they have these small moments of, like, I'm going to miss you. Like, you're going to die and I'm going to miss you, dad. And it's the kind of shit that, like, you know, that is not, like, there's such masculinity and so many, like, masculine tropes that we're kind of exploring in Yellowstone that I really appreciated this scene and this notion of, like, who are we really? Like, is this the real John Dutton, the emotional, sensitive, I'm going to miss my father, I just want to be a good son to my dad who, like, had all these expectations for me? But like, when that is the, like, 2% of your life that you get to show, when so much of your life is dominated by this mask that you have to wear, even if that's not the real you, like, how long do you live in that space until that is the real you, right? Is it what we feel or is it what we do? Like, how are we defined? There's just a level of, like, I don't know, philosophical depth that I got into, Grace, of, like, interrogating the motivations of this man, John Dutton, who's a pretty ruthless, nefarious character that we get to by the end of it. That's going to tell Dan Jenkins, no, dude, you can't sell your land. I'm sorry. Don't make us go hang you again, you know? Who's going to go, like, murder these people? Who's willing to do such, like, kind of brutal things, right? Who's going to, like, take a guy like Walker to the train station, right? How many times has that happened on the Yellowstone? Like, there's all these little beats, but at the end of the day, he's just like a boy trying to fulfill his father's expectations. And it's so fascinating to me to, like, explore the depth of that. I'm really fixating on a small moment, but it left me with a lot of thoughts, you know?
It opens the season finale, right? Like, that's first scene of that moment. And so I do feel, or of that episode. So I feel like it is an important moment to sit and think about, like, why do they put it in the show? Why does Taylor Sheridan, he writes this episode with Eric Beck, like, why do they put it in? Which is, this, like, the you know, so much of this show, a lot of the show is about John's kids and John's kids and what he is trying to figure out, you know, who can maintain, you know, the loss of their ranch is, like, the worst thing imaginable to him. Well, you can kind of see why. His father's like, don't lose an inch of this land, right? And also that I think that probably John's father, right? So there's this line where he says, what does he say? So it's John Sr. says he misses John's mother and his brother, and he loves his son, and John says it only took 90 years, right? So I feel like John must internalize that of, like, even if your father, like, he must love his kids. I think he loves all of his kids, including Jamie, who he's, like, pretty
awesome. Agreed. Yeah.
But he loves them all. But this is kind of the thing is, like, your father doesn't need to tell you he loves you to show that he loves you. Right. And almost to potentially what he presumes is his father's success is the idea that actually having been told he loved him might have actually made him, like, a worse rancher or a worse, you know, he wouldn't have been as good as he was. And it's not until the end of his life that his father's life, that he finally says, like, I love you. And so I think John takes that and internalizes it. And it's why he's, like, so harsh on his children and the fact that they need to be trained to basically be able to do what he was able to do after his own father died.
Yeah, I think that you're spot on. We go back to last episode of Casey talking to Jamie, and Jamie, like, do you forgive me? Casey, like, you're my brother, man. And he's like, yeah, but you're not answering it. He's like, yeah, I did. Like, yeah, I did. This idea, and I think it translates so well that you don't have to say the thing, right? That, like, there is this belief. It's back to, like, John's whole thing that, like, I just want to make sure that there's seats at the table for everybody who wants to come sit down, right? That's love. It's almost, Grace, it's almost as though all the best cowboys have daddy issues.
Yeah. I mean, it is like, in terms of, we talked a lot about that this show is not right wing in the way people think it's right wing, like propaganda or whatever. It's really not. I really don't think it is after having watched two series of this show.
No, it's definitely not. I mean, like, look, it's speaking to rural life, and I think it's got, like, a real, like, devoted fan base in the parts of the world that are associated with that. So it's easy to disconnect, but yes.
Well, the thing is, I do think, like, not saying I love you all the time for me is like a very, like, there is this way in which, like, you know, the ranchers, the cowboys, it does have this old school mentality. And I actually think at times, like, the show is actually trying to critique that, right? That
it,
like,
is.
That John somehow managed to, like, get through, even though his father basically never told him he loved him. And yet that is not working. Clearly it's not working for Jamie. It doesn't really work for Casey. It's not really working for Beth either. And so,
Right.
The only person, and even in the way he's, and this is so relatable to me as someone who comes from, like, rural Ontario, very conservative family. It did take a long time for my family. It basically took, like, a kind of a family altering incident for us to finally, like, say we love each other. Not that we didn't, but it's like, it's very actively, like, at the end of each call now, it's like,
no, okay, I get it.
I love you. And it was not a thing that I feel like we had in our life a lot, but it's not that we didn't know we loved each other. We would express it through different ways. And that's where, like, Rich, you will understand this, that one of the ways in which I often am able to say I love somebody is through gifts. So my brother and I will often, like, you know, pick up the bill at dinner, or, like, you know, whatever it is. When I come home, the house is stocked with these things that, whether or not it's true or not, my mom thinks I love them. So there are croissants. There's, like, the yogurt that I might have, like, been eating at the time. Like, I was like, oh, I really like this yogurt. Then every time I come home, like, that yogurt.
Yep, it's there. It is.
My mom will say she loves me. Like, I'm not trying to imply that she doesn't. But there's these other ways that I think are, like, ingrained in our family of, like, that's actually the way that you, like, show your love, which I feel like is really resonant in the show. I think the table example is, like, the best example of that. And how sometimes, like, I'm so glad that my family has got to a point where, like, we're more likely to say we love each other, because, like, I think sometimes it needs to actually be said. Like, it does, as much as, like, there are these things that I know are ways in which, like, my brother, my mom, my dad, we show each other we love each other. Sometimes you actually just have to say, like, yeah, I love you, you know? So,
yep. Yeah. No, I totally feel you. My parents were real hippies, and so there was a lot of, like, vocalization, or they came out of that time, at least one of the two of them was certainly hippie. But also, you know, their parents were that Greatest Generation bootstraps folks, and I came up in a single parent household, and a lot of time being raised by the grandparents and the extended family. There was a lot of this mentality, this, like, gruff, steely, like, it's what you do, it's not what you say, it's about how you act. Like, in the 11th hour, when push comes to shove, I'll always be there for you, but I'm also still going to yell at you and call you a stupid idiot all the time. You know, a lot of that. I find it really poignant, and I do think that there is a real meaningful critique where it's not, like, an indictment of this 1950s classic America, like, tough, steely men and, like, women take care of the family mentality. It's not, like, necessarily an indictment of that, but it's certainly a critique. And I think that it is looking at these ideas of, like, is this really working though? Like, has this really working for us here? You know,
I just tried to go through them all, and I'm like, nope, not working for him, not working for him, not working for her.
It's definitely not.
And it's even working really for Rip, insightful. But he never said he loved him. He just, like, says, like, now I have a son. Doesn't even really say it's Rip. Like, he just, like, implies it, right? So,
and it breaks him down. It's really wonderful. I thought it's really poignant. We didn't talk about it much, but the Jimmy Herdstrom, we're gonna go kill the meth dealer. Jimmy got his belt buckle back. How you feeling about Jimmy's situation here, Grace?
Okay, good for Jimmy. Boy, they go dark. And his grandfather dies from a heart attack from being beat up. Like, we don't even see it on screen. Like, my God, we went real in on the Jimmy tragedy here in this episode. I mean, I don't hate it, but I'm like, boy, and you know what? It does offset a little bit that I thought, like, we do obviously lose Dan, allegedly.
Allegedly, if a body bag is any
I guess. That I thought maybe, like, I really did think Rip might go. And so I don't really know. This is the second season of a show. Obviously, the season premiere ends in, like, a bit where, like, two people who you thought, like, could have been in the show are dead, in terms of Lee and then Monica's brother-in-law. But the show has not really played in that. And in fact, the Dan Jenkins, like, fake out is, like, the exact, like, opposite of it, of, like, we'll pretend that people's lives are at stake, but they're not actually at stake. So not that I wanted somebody else off the board, but I wondered if that's the type of show that it would be, because I thought that the premiere of the show goes so hard in that, but I think it's very different
body count. Yeah.
I feel like it's different to be in the first episode. Like, you know, it's like, hey, you're going to be in the show for one episode versus like, you are going to be in like one of the most successful shows the last 5 years, you know, and we're going to write you off after the end of season two. Like, that does suck. You know, it's like, you know, to lose anybody here. But they make up for it because they kill off Jimmy's granddad. Pretty dark.
I just love Jimmy having his moment and go back in for the belt buckle.
Yeah, it's good.
You man up, Jimmy. You earned that black hat, buddy. The brand coming through. I don't know if there's anything else that we didn't stop in on that you want to circle back to, you, but I do think it's a really electric ending. Like, I joke, but, you know, Taylor Sheridan can be a really strong writer. Sicario is a hell of a movie, you know, and I feel like this last hour is really tense. It's shot pretty well. It's maybe a little bit dark, but there's just so much kind of momentum and energy, and there's really subtle great writing. I love the bit of like the Horace Thomas like doubling down, the whole episode title, like, oh yeah, it's always the innocents that suffer for the things that we men do, this notion of like the sins of the father tying back to Dutton Senior and John's father. Like, that's just Thomas. So much weight there.
That's Thomas calling John, which I liked a lot.
That's Thomas, what I meant, if I misspoke. But that's what I'm saying. The Thomas John call is excellent. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. And I do think, like, I wish it was kind of implied, but the fact that, like, Tate is from his, like, you know, is indigenous, like, he's a native. Part native. I wish there was, like, maybe a little bit of, like, a note to that of, like, this is actually a chat that, like, you know, is. Like, not that he's like, he wouldn't say like, it's my grandson, but like, I have a connection to him too, you know, like, I thought could have been an interesting way, but I do like the way that like, he's like, I will support you in this one. Like, this is a line too far for the Beck brothers.
It's a clever move. You know, the whole like Monica, Casey Tate dynamic, it like frames up Thomas and John in a really fascinating way, because there is this overlap and this connection through their grandson, through like their literal family ties in that way. That's kind of fascinating. It wouldn't be a Yellowstone podcast if I don't talk a little bit of smack about Tate, but like, this poor kid has been through an absolute rigors. He is captured by white supremacists that like, oh my.
Yeah, that's the other piece that I was like, yeah.
It's a little much. There's like some of the like the set dressing in that space I felt very uncomfortable about. And they shaved his head.
Yeah.
They gave him a full skinhead look. But I gotta like throw a little shade of like Breck and Merrill. Like, this kid has become a better actor over five seasons of Yellowstone. Yeah. But his like meltdown, like screaming, I'm like, oh, okay, Tom. Wow.
there's a television in the like in the room when they're like,
oh yeah, I saw it,
that just says white pride, just says, that's just what it says on the and it looks like it's almost like a PowerPoint or like a,
I think it's a music image. Video I think they're listening to a white pride music video. There's like rock music playing, you know, I'm like, what is even going on, man?
I didn't love that, but you know what, you know, you got to kill some people and maybe you feel way better about killing them than anybody else.
Very fair. That's season two of Yellowstone, Grace. We have talked through 19 episodes.
Can I just say the teal killing is very good. It's very good. Casey coming in, shooting him in the gut, being like, I have lots of places to shoot. Like, he's like, please just don't let me die in the toilet. He's like, nah, my wife said I gotta kill you. I'm gonna kill you.
The like back and forth between he and John, right? Like, John shoots up his guy and sits down and is like, gonna do good murderer, and Casey's doing bad murderer, right? Like, I can make this really brutal for you, buddy. Yeah. John going with like the psychological manipulation, Casey overtly physical, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're again going to like be at the whim here of like trying to see if CBS does it. I got to say, I'm intrigued to watch more.
Me too.
I was trying to pace out. I don't know if folks have can provide me on DD. You might be able to, Rich. Like, if I like dive into the prequels, am I like at risk of spoiling anything from the main show?
No.
So that might be an avenue I take where like I can quench my thirst for season more Yellowstone to like be unspoiled on the pod by diving into to the prequels, but I might just end up watching Yellowstone. So maybe by the time we come back, I am in more of the zeitgeist of Yellowstone than I have been previously. So
Keep talking about you keep talking about how Lloyd is the Sam Elliott stand-in in Yellowstone. 1883, they got the original flavor. Grace. I know. They got Sam Elliott original, and he's
not
is
Sam
so
Elliott.
Effing good.
Yeah,
1883, yeah. Like Banks, right? You got like the big country guy whose name I'm not forgetting. How am I forgetting his name right now? He's like fantastic. He and his wife Faith Hill, Tim McGraw, right? It's Tim McGraw and Faith Hill. They're really good. 1883, I think Banks. 1923, it's not bad. I do think that I decidedly like it maybe more than Yellowstone. I'm always a sucker for a period piece. It really hangs on like it does some crazy stuff. We're in like Africa. We're dealing with like some ghost in the jungle adjacent, real like Legends of the Fall vibes for 1923. So I would recommend both. I think you can watch both without being spoiled. I think it'll give you a little context, like the idea of that ranch that John gives to Rip. This was the first ranch house, right? Before they got mega 21st century wealthy and could build the McMansion, right?
Right.
So you touch on some cool stuff, and I don't think it blows up anything that you don't want to know. But yeah. Nonetheless, we will be back when we come back. PostShowRecaps.com/Yellowstone is the RSS feed. Go subscribe to it right now. So whenever Grace and I return to the airwaves talking Yellowstone, they will be directly downloaded into your podcast player of choice. Until then, Grace, what do you got going on? Where can people find you?
I'm talking about Fargo. I'm talking about The Crown, The Curse, talking movies with Ariel. This past week, we talked about both The Holdovers as well as Napoleon. And then we're going to be talking about the Beyonce movie, which I think is actually a 5-star classic.
And,
I know. It was so good. I was so entranced by that movie. I'm very excited. I believe Matt Scott is going to be joining us for that. Jess and I have been doing full spoiler recaps. This past week, we did Colin from Accounts, which is an Australian show that is on Paramount Plus. The network, which you can find, the streaming service, you can find Yellowstone. So check that out. It's an 8-episode, like 20-minute comedy. It's very funny. And so we talked about that with Sarah Carradine. So that should come out by the time you're listening to this or about a day later. And I'm on social media at High From Grace. What about you, Rich?
Very, very cool. I'm at DM Philly in all the places, Twitch, YouTube, over on Twitter, even on Blue Sky. You can find me in the Post Show Recaps Patreon Discord, patreon.com/postshowrecaps, $10 a month. You could jump in and hit both of us up at Yellowstone or play D&D or jump in the Brant's deal. We got a lot of stuff going on there. I am talking about Beacon 23 every week with the great Corey B. This show is awesome, Grace. It's really good. It's on MGM Plus. I think you could get access to it through Amazon in at least the U.S., as it were. Lena Headey back on TV. It's been really fun, a really like underrated gem closing out the end of 2023 for me. I'm loving it. That's pretty much it. I'm keeping busy out there, so go follow me in the places. You'll hear what I'm doing.
Can I say, if you listen to any shows that Rich or I covered and you think that they are maybe the best shows of the year, you should vote. PostRecaps.com/survey2023 as we're in the midst of our year in review podcast series. We'll be counting down. We'll have different episodes on different shows that we covered or bundles of shows. Today I did a pod that should come out later this week about the murder mystery in TV 2023. Yep. So check that out, and then make sure you vote, as there'll be a countdown show of the top 10 shows of 2023.
Well, I am excited. I'm going to be talking about the fantasy shows of the year 2023 with my great compatriot, the podcaster Taylor Baum, my girl. And I should say, Grace, but I'm worried about this top 10 list, because you know Mayfair Witches is going to run away with that thing. We're going to be talking about the best show of 2023. Mayfair Witches.
That's right.
Keep an ear out for that. Thank you very much for joining us. We hope that you guys are all doing well out there. We will be back someday, but it is not this day.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.